Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to this latest edition of the Cyril Gerald Quinn Sports Podcast on this 25th of March 2017 as we discuss the world of sports and pop culture. As always, the call number is 347-215-6180. A lot to do on this busy program, a lot of basketball. We're now down to 8 teams who will, as we have 3 of the Blue Bloods still remain in North Carolina, Kentucky, and Kansas. The NCAA is badly, and I mean desperately, wants a combination of either a Kansas-North Carolina championship or a North Carolina championship or a Kansas-Kentucky championship. When you have some of the programs like Duke out and Louisville out, that's what the NCAA is certainly hoping for. Overall, you have to be happy if you're a college basketball fan about the Sweet 16. You had some great, tremendous games, especially, Thursday. Listen, you had the one Kansas did what it did to Purdue, but overall, you had some dramatic games on Thursday. And again, let me get that correct. It would be Kansas and it would be Kansas, North Carolina in the national semifinals. So that, let me get that out, as the South is playing the Midwest. So there's going to be one team left. There's going to be one team in the national championship game. You're going to get probably a blue blood versus a team that, versus not a Cinderella, but a basic newcomer in terms of the national championship game. More than likely. Now, I understand Florida, and that's where we're going to begin. I understand Florida's still in. They've won a couple of championships, but they're not a blue blood. And I get that they've won 2 championships under Billy Donovan in 07, 06, 06, and 07, but they're not a blue blood. They're not on that level of UCLA, Kentucky, or Duke, or Kansas. Gonzaga. So you're gonna have a first time team in the Final Four. But we're gonna begin with the Florida Wisconsin game before we get to Kentucky UCLA. So Florida, of course, wins in dramatic fashion. The kid hits a crazy shot to win it at the buzzer. But really, the game shouldn't even came down to that. Wisconsin has a 3-point lead at the end of regulation. And instead of fouling and making the player either do one of two things, either make both free throws and foul again, okay, or have them make a free throw and then miss a free throw on purpose, and then the team still has a score to tie the game. So, I just never understand this theory, either on the pro level or the NBA level, of why up by 3, you don't foul. And the excuse I've heard, and it's the dumbest excuse that you're, known to man, is, well, we don't practice that. Or a commentator will say, well, maybe they don't practice that. Well, I'll say this. If you don't practice that, then you don't need to be – then the guy who's coaching the team doesn't need to be coaching the team. You should practice all scenarios, all situations. It's called situational basketball. Like teams in the NFL practice 4-minute offense, 2-minute drill. You practice that stuff for a reason. If you don't practice that, then you have the wrong person coaching your particular team. Because to me, it's playing the percentages. What are the odds that a guy is going to make, you know, you foul right away. You don't wait till the guy gets into the shooting motion. You foul immediately after the inbounds. An official is not going to sit up there. You know, the odds on the guy hitting a four-point play, hitting a four-point play are just a remote. It's not going to happen. And let's say you do foul in the act of a three-point shot. He still has to make three free throws. That's much better than allowing somebody to to tie the game with a three-point shot. Because that's all basketball is now. All guys are trained to shoot three-pointers. So the chances of a guy making a three-pointer is, you take those odds versus a guy making a free throw, making two free throws, then you'll get fouled, you make your free throws or make one free throw, they have to come back down. Like, so it just makes no sense to go to allow a team, to take a team off the hook by allowing them to tie the game, possibly tie the game with a three-point shot. You want to make them go through as many steps as possible in order to tie the game. See, I think about, taking a three-point shot is one step. That's one step. It's one shot. One shot ties the game. Fouling them, they have to make free throws. They have to foul you again and then hope that you miss one free throw. And even if you do miss one free throw, then they have to get the ball back and still score again and still score. So again, I never get the concept of not fouling up by three. Now, their coach, it's not, you'll be amazed about how many great coaches don't believe in it. I don't think Phil Jackson, 13 championships, 11 championships in terms of coaching, did not believe in it. And this is Phil Jackson, for whatever reason, did not believe in being fouling down by three. So Wisconsin loses the absolute heartbreaker. Florida, again, fortunate to win that game, but give Florida credit. They came back against a veteran Wisconsin team, a Wisconsin team that has been as consistent as any over the last 4 years with the four straight Sweet 16 appearances, two Final Fours, and, of course, the national championship appearance back in 2015 when they had Kaminsky and Sam Decker and then those guys. Koenig was younger, and Nigel Hayes was a sophomore. So tough loss for Wisconsin. Tough way to go out. Other than that, I like the coach. The coach clearly is very good. But again, give Florida credit. He made the shot. They made the shot to tie the game. They make a miracle shot to win the game, and that's March Madness at its best. In that overtime. And again, also, too, Wisconsin, missed 10 free throws, 5 free throw misses in overtime. That just was too much for them to overcome as they go home and Florida advances to play a South Carolina team that all of a sudden looks like an absolute juggernaut. South Carolina just throttles Baylor last night with their defense. You asked me who I like going to that game. Based on how they're playing, I have to like South Carolina. I mean, South Carolina looks like an absolute machine. They've taken what they did to Duke, and that confidence level, their confidence level right now is at an all-time high. I mean, they're defensively, I mean, they are taking teams out of their offense. Baylor, I think Baylor's a pretty good team. I mean, Baylor's a very good team, and they completely took them out of their offense with their defense. Those guys are playing together. They believe. I really like South Carolina tomorrow against Florida. Of course, SEC has three teams remaining with those two and also Kentucky. And here's what I'll say about the Kentucky-UCLA game. You're going to get, and we've already seen it, the classic overreaction in terms of Lonzo Ball being outplayed by DeAndre Fox. All right, I'm going to tell you this. And give Kentucky a lot of credit. Ball and Monk were phenomenal. Their defense definitely was much more improved from the first game. Last first game, they gave up 97 points. This game, of course, held UCLA in check and was really in control of the game for the majority of that second half. UCLA came out first half. Once Kentucky was able to follow the lead of Fox, they really took control of that game. Once they were, because early on, you know, it could have been a 15 point lead for UCLA, but Fox, you know, scored the first 8 points of the game. He really settled UCLA down. Excuse me, settled Kentucky into that game before Monk got hot. And then the Kentucky defense was great in the second half. Not a particularly good game for Lonzo Ball. You know, 10 points, 8 assists, 1 for 6 from 3-point range. Had about 4 turnovers, so he didn't particularly play well. But don't by any means, if you think that DeAndre Fox is a and I like Fox. I think Fox is going to be probably a top. He's probably making himself. Higher up the draft board as each game goes by. He'll probably be a top 6 or 7 pick, maybe even top 5. He's a very talented player, a supreme defensive player. Inconsistent shooter, but a supreme defensive player. But if you, by any stretch of the imagination, think that DeAndre Fox is a better pro prospect than Lonzo Ball, then you need to be drug tested. Like, this guy, Lonzo Ball, is the real deal. He's going to face the criticism after a game like that. You know, the first thing you're going to hear is, well, he didn't play well because of what his father said. His father's pressure, per se, which I don't believe for a second. I've seen a lot better players have bad games in the NCAA tournament than Lonzo Ball. Remember, Tim Duncan got beat in the game by Bryant Reeves, okay, Oklahoma State. You remember, back in 95, the 95 regional final. Oklahoma State beat Wake Forest. Okay. So this is Tim. So, you know, how do those two careers go? Bryant Reeves, remember Big Country? That played about a cup of coffee with Memphis, with the then Vancouver Grizzlies. So don't read anything into that game in regards to Lonzo Ball. Like, to me, without question, he should be the number one pick. I like Fultz, but if I had the number one pick, it's no question it's Lonzo Ball, without question. But again, that was a great win for Kentucky. They played superior. They played excellent defense in the second half. Again, you get 60 out of two players, you're going to be pretty hard to beat. They have some nice role players. They have some couple of veteran role players. This is this Kentucky team. Unlike past Kentucky teams, now, again, 2012, they were just dominant. But unlike their team last year, unlike their team in 2015, and, the past couple years, this team has along with the great freshmen, they have some other veteran players, guys who are sophomores and a couple seniors, to kind of balance that lack of experience out. So so you like them this year than you have in the past couple years. Now, again, couple years ago, when they were undefeated, I thought there was no way they were ever going to lose. But when you go back and look at it, that inexperience cost them, and along with some spotty coaching by John Calipari, in terms of winning a championship in 2015, losing to Wisconsin in the Final Four. As far as UNC, listen, Butler. I thought Butler played great in the second half, but you can't spot if you're Butler. You are not going to beat UNC down by 10, 15. It got to a point where they just couldn't score enough points. That's not what Butler's about. Butler's like a football team that has a great running game and a solid defense. If they fall more than two scores behind, and they got to have to throw it all the time, and they have some serious issues. And that's what Butler is. Butler's an excellent defensive team, can make some shots, but cannot fall behind. Once North Carolina got the 10 to 15 point lead, even though they're, even and give Butler credit, second half, Butler did close the gap to 10 before Barry, you know, made a big three, kind of, you know, Barry made a big three, and you know, that was it. That was basically it. But again, North Carolina just had just too much size for Butler, overpowered Butler. Barry had a big game, had a little scare with you know, rolled his ankle a little bit, but still didn't affect him. 26 points. We'll see how he looks against Kentucky. He's going to have to be close to 100% against DeAndre Fox, who is playing as well as any point guard in the country right now. But Barry, Jackson have both had big games. North Carolina puts 92 on the board, and we get our North Carolina Kentucky dream rematch. And to me, which was the game of the year, if you watched it. And I'm sure between now and tomorrow afternoon that they'll show that game somewhere, whether it's ESPN or CBS, because it was. I'd certainly recommend watching it. It was 103-100. Monk made the game winning shot. You know, they traded. Listen, they went back and forth. That game was an absolute track meet. 203 points in regulation. So those teams, you know, were just going up and down on the floor. Now, again, I don't expect, you know, them to play. I don't think it'll be first to 100 in this game. I think both teams are better defensively. This is the NCAA tournament, more pressure. But that game will be up and down. We'll talk more about that game when, of course, the program. But that game will be a fun game to watch. For if you're a college basketball fan, UNC and Kentucky, the two Kentucky, two winningest programs in the history of college basketball in terms of wins, in terms of NCAA tournament wins, first and fifth in terms of national championships, Kentucky being first, North Carolina being tied for third, only behind UCLA and Kentucky, and tied with Indiana and Duke for a number of national championships with five. Again, we know the history of those two programs. Both shades of blue. So looking forward to that matchup as we head towards a Final Four. And again, we're going to have, you know, today you have, you're going to have some, you know, a little bit of history between Xavier and Gonzaga. One of those teams will be their first appearance in the Final Four. Kansas will take on Oregon, which should be a very good game. Though Kansas, Kansas is playing better than any team in the country now. Listen, let's not get crazy about Kansas being, you know, this juggernaut that can't be beat. I think, you know, people are saying, you know, can they beat Kansas? Yes, Kansas can be beat, but they are playing great basketball right now. Really have dominated throughout the course of the tournament. We'll see how it goes against Oregon as they try to make another Final Four appearance for Bill Self and company. 347-215-6180 is your call number. Again, a lot of college basketball, a lot of NBA. We'll get it going right after this. On this latest edition of the Steel Drill Quick Sports Podcast. As always, you can follow us. Follow me on Twitter at William Drill, or go to Instagram and follow me on Instagram. Follow me on Twitter at William Drill, or go to my Instagram account and follow me at Rillo Drill Quinn. So Devin Booker scored 70 points last night in a game where, you know, not much defense was played, to say the least. You know, 250 points between Boston and Phoenix in regulation. There was no overtimes. Booker scored 70. He had Yeah, Booker scored 70, and the next closest guy to him scored 11. He took 40 shots. The next closest guy took what was Leandro Barbosa, who amazingly is still playing, took 12 shots. And, you know, 21 of 40, over 50%, 24 for 26 from the free throw line. He shot 4 of 11 from the three-point from downtown. Listen, I like Devin Booker a lot. I think he's a, like, the guy, remember, he's only 20 years old, or maybe he might be 21 by now, 20 or 21. So, and he's having a great season. I mean, he's averaging about 20, you know, probably like 21 points a game. He's on a bad team, a bad franchise. I think he has a chance to be an all-NBA, all-star caliber player moving forward once he gets a real coach and they start getting some real players around him. That was, you know, it was a great performance, but I'll tell you what, that watching the highlights, watching the celebration, watching the Instagram pictures, it tells you why Phoenix is one of the worst franchises in the NBA. You know, you're celebrating a 10-point loss. Okay, you're celebrating a 10-point loss. You're on a team that's 22-51, one of the worst teams in the league. And, you know, to a point to where they were 40, and I don't blame him at all. I don't blame Devin Booker. Because he did have eight rebounds and six assists and three steals. So it's not like he was not doing, you know, he was gunning, but he was still, he still was passing the ball. He was he rebounded well. So he was phenomenal. But I'm talking about the culture around him. You have guys, Tyson Chandler won a championship, okay, for a Dallas team. It was a big part of the reason why Dallas won that championship. Probably I'll make the case what other outside of Dirk Nowitzki was the biggest reason why they won the championship back in 2011 when they beat the Heat. Jared Dudley, longtime NBA veteran, been around, has had a nice career, solid player, good, you know, 3-and-D guy. You know, they're the main cheerleaders. You have Jared Dudley, who had 10 assists, was going out of his way to get Devin Booker the ball. You had Tyson Chandler. You know, you have Tyson Chandler on the team. You had the Phoenix. You know, they're taking pictures after the game, posting, you know, taking pictures after the game, putting them on Instagram. You lost the game by 10 points. Okay, you lost the game. And I know you were supposed to lose because Boston's better. But, you know, you have Earl Watson calling timeouts just so that he could get 70 points, not letting the clock run, calling timeouts. And then he gets questioned, and then Earl Watson, you know, wants to play tough guy in post game, you know, because one media guy, you know, a good question was asked by one of the media members on why were you calling timeouts with, like, when the game was out of reach. And there was a point when the game was out of reach, but about, you know, under a minute. You know, he basically says, this is what we do, do something. Like, Earl, what do you mean, do something? Like, what do you think, the reporter's going to attack you? Then one of the reporters asked, what about the perception of what you were trying to do? Do something. So that is the epitome of a losing culture. It's an epitome of a losing culture. Now, again, a historic night. Only three other players in NBA history have scored more than 70. Have scored 70 or more points. Or four other players. Yeah, you had Will Chamberlain, of course, Kobe Bryant, David Robinson, and I believe David Thompson had a 70-point game. I want to say that Elgin Baylor had one too. But those are the three. Those are the four that come to mind. But it hasn't been done, of course, in 11 years since Kobe Bryant did it in January 2006. Remember championship NFC conference championship Sunday when he scored 81 in a win, I might add, when they were down by 18. I don't blame Devin Booker. That's the thing about this situation. I'm not knocking Devin Booker at all. You're on a bad team. You're the best player, so you're going to take majority of shots anyway. He did have six assists and eight rebounds, and they were force-feeding him the ball. You would you would have thought they were giving him the ball just like the Lakers were doing in Kobe's final game last year. Like, yeah, shoot it. No, shoot it. Shoot it. It was funny. It was hot potato to Kobe Bryant. Just like, it was hot potato to Devin Booker, just like it was hot potato to Kobe Bryant. So, I mean, what else is he going to do? He's a shooter. He's a scorer. He's going to shoot the basketball. He's going to shoot the basketball. And he did – listen, he did go to the line 26 times. So he was a great – it wasn't just wasting up crazy shots. Shot over 50%, went to the line 26 times. So it is a phenomenal performance. Like, any, I don't care what team you are. I don't care what your team's record. If you score 70 points in the game, that's out of this world. You can't knock that performance. But again, the culture around Devin Booker was nothing short of a disgrace. I mean, it really was. And it explains why Phoenix is in their current predicament with that coach and that organization. Joakim Noah suspended 20 games for violating the NBA's drug policy. Now he'll be suspended. I think he'll go. I think they are splitting up the suspension, 10 and 10. So he'll be suspended 10 games, the last 10 games of this season, the first 10 games of next season. Well, I just say this: it was apparently an over-the-counter supplement that, of course, is banned. That, of course, is a banned supplement. And whatever it was, it didn't work. Joakim Noah was awful this year. 5 points, almost 9 rebounds. He did play better before he got hurt, but for the most part, that signing and that contract was, they still got 3 more years on that contract. That was just an awful signing. He was just like much of the New York Knicks basketball team. It was just terrible. So whatever he was taking, it was not worth it. Whatever it was, it didn't help him. Didn't help him at all. So you have that. At the program, later on in the program, we're going to get to the LeVar versus LeBron, which I found hilarious. And again, LeVar Ball just he throws the bait and everybody goes for it. Even when he's not trying to pull you in, he finds a way to pull everybody in, which I find hilarious how this dude is branding himself along with his sons. We'll talk about that over the course of the program. Of course, today, the Elite Eight, you have Kansas, Oregon, Xavier, and also Kansas, Oregon, and you'll have Xavier. You have Xavier, Gonzaga, Kansas, Oregon, both Gonzaga and Xavier are looking for their first ever Final Four appearances. Gonzaga, listen, if Gonzaga couldn't make it this year, then they were never going to make it, with Arizona getting knocked out. And with Notre Dame, West Virginia. When we return, we will get to Thursday's action. Because there are a couple things I want to say about Thursday's Sweet 16, especially in regards to Arizona. We'll get to that. We return on this latest edition of the Cyril Gerald Quinn Sports Podcast on a beautiful Saturday morning. Hope you're enjoying it. Get out there, get out there and enjoy this nice weather, especially down in the DMV. We'll be right back. Cyril Gerald Quinn on this latest edition of the Cyril Gerald Quinn Sports Podcast. The Thursday games, again, Thursday was, if you were a college basketball fan, Thursday was just one of those nights that you know, dream about if you're a fan of college basketball. You had three close games out, you know, Kansas, of course, ran away with that game. But Thursday, you know, you have three close games. With Oregon, Michigan, Xavier, Arizona, Gonzaga, West Virginia. I'll go to the Xavier, Arizona one first, because to me that one was the most disappointing, especially if you're an Arizona fan, as far as they had no business, right? I mean, Arizona had no business losing to an Xavier team that I thought, and we talked about this with Javon Alford on the day after a couple of days after Selection Sunday, I thought Xavier was fortunate to get into the tournament. And I made the case that I thought Syracuse probably should have got in over them. As one of the teams I thought Syracuse could, and USC as well, that I thought Syracuse should have been in the tournament over. They wouldn't say Xavier was not good this year. Came into the tournament 21-13, hadn't beat a lot of good teams, wasn't playing well going into the tournament, but they have found their rhythm. They have a brilliant, and I mean brilliant, coach. I mean, if you're Indiana, and you know, make your fantasy call the Brad Stevens, which is not, you know, which we know is not happening. But go ahead, but make the call anyway. You know, all you can say is no. But after you make that call, the first call you should be making is the Chris Mack. And that guy is just a tremendous coach. I mean, four Sweet 16s in 8 years at that program is remarkable. Because that is not a, you know, we're talking about the blue bloods with, you know, UNC and Kentucky. Xavier doesn't get anywhere near that type of talent. Not even close. And, you know, did we need Sean Miller to tell us that he was outcoached by Chris Mack? I think if we have two eyes to watch the game, I think we pretty much knew that you were badly outcoached in that performance. Just an awful performance by Arizona. Arizona has just continuously disappointed over the course of in the Sean Miller era, despite the fact that during his time they've had seven guys. They have currently seven players playing in the NBA that played under Sean Miller during his time there. Seven. So they get top-notch talent. Anytime you look at the recruiting rankings, Arizona's going to be in the top two or three. They'll be right there behind Duke, behind Kentucky, and they're going to be, more times than not, they'll be next in line. So, they're getting NBA talent left and right. For them not to have a Final Four appearance, you know, they haven't been to the Final Four, I want to say since 2000 what? One? I don't think they haven't been to the Final Four since 2001. They almost made it the 1 year where they blew the lead against Illinois in 2005. That, you know, Darren Williams of Illinois was shooting all those threes, and you know, rode them all the way to a championship before losing North Carolina. But Arizona is like this generation's new disappointing team. You know, that's why I cannot trust them. I refuse to trust them to win. I had a horrible time picking brackets this year. I mean, it was just awful. I was terrible this year, but I just didn't trust Arizona to not only get to the Final Four, but definitely not to win a national championship, because frankly they're just not well coached. Again, Sean Miller falls into that category of great recruiter, average coach, because there's no way in the world that they should have lost to Xavier. Xavier's not, I mean, again, Xavier, their team's not good. not very good. Now they are extremely well coached, but in terms of the talent this year, that is not even close to being a vintage Xavier team. The Xavier team last year was 3 times better than this team this year, which is the funny thing about college basketball. A lot of times you see teams with more talent 1 year, and then next year they lose a couple players, and for whatever reason, you know, circumstance, different bracket, chemistry, that team gets farther. It happens a lot. I've seen it happen a few times, especially seen it happen to Syracuse a couple times. I thought their 95 team was much better. They had more talent than the 96 team. The 96 team went all the way to the national championship game and gave that legendary Kentucky team a great run in a game where they were clearly overmatched, if you remember how great that 96 Kentucky team was. But that happens a lot in college basketball. So that, like, you know, it is, like, if I'm in Arizona, if you are the athletic director, if you are an Arizona fan, you have to be sick to your stomach that the team could not even get to the Elite Eight with the amount of talent that that team had, not to be able to get to the Elite Eight. I mean, it's no excuse for it. And I don't want to hear it's March Madness. I don't want to hear about anything can happen. No. You lost to an average team. You lost to an average Xavier team, at best, in a game where you were up late in the second half. As far as the Michigan-Oregon game, give Oregon a lot of credit. I thought Michigan, when Michigan took the 3-point lead late in the second half, thought Michigan was somewhat in control of the game. Oregon and Dorsey has made every big play in this postseason. He has been great in this postseason. I know Dylan Brooks gets all the pub, but Dorsey, to me, has been Oregon's MVP up until this point. Listen, you want to talk about well-coached. Michigan, did anybody think about Michigan over the course of this season? I mean, you're talking about having a team play above his head. And this is why there are coaches who are tournament coaches versus coaches who are good regular season coaches that just get into the tournament. John Beilein falls in that category of being a great, great tournament coach. His teams are tough. This team overachieved. I mean, this Michigan team wasn't any good this year. I mean, they had some nice guards. They peaked at the right time. But this wasn't even close to being one of his better teams. Not even close. So, give Michigan team a lot of credit. They miss a shot at the buzzer. The Walton kid misses a shot that we've seen him make 1,000 times at the buzzer, and they go down to Oregon in a game that was an absolute classic. Both teams were just, both teams were just making plays down the stretch. Great game. West Virginia, Gonzaga. I don't want to hear about the fouls, about foul calls from Bob Huggins. First of all, your team shot 22% from the field. They made 16 of 60. So which shows you how great defensively they are. They turned Gonzaga over. Gonzaga had a hard time handling their pressure. But West Virginia will make you play ugly. Gonzaga had to, give Gonzaga credit for being able to win a game like that when Gonzaga likes to score. Gonzaga likes to score. But that's what Gonzaga does have that type of team that can win in multiple ways this year. They do have that type of team. They can win in a track meet. They can win in a slowdown game. They prefer to get up and down the court and be, execute their offense, be efficient. But they, West Virginia forces you to play ugly. So I give Gonzaga a lot of credit as far as being able to win that type of game. I don't want to hear about the officials when your team actually shot one more free throw than the other team. And when your team missed 46 shots. Okay, so I don't want to hear Bob Huggins talking about free throws. Like, give me a break. The one thing I will say about the officiating, in the NCAA tournament has been awful this year. They review an out of bounds play, an out of bounds ball going out of bounds play late in that game. The game is tied, and you could have went to the bathroom, did a load of laundry, put a load of clothes in the laundry, came back, and the game still not restarted. That's how long they took to review that play. I know, I understand it was a big play in determining whose ball it was, but that, I mean, for it to take that, I mean, it killed the momentum of the game. You're in the midst of a classic game, a tie game, and a tense game, Sweet 16, you know, Elite Eight berth on the line, and, you know, to have to take about at least, I'm telling you, it took at least 3 to 5 minutes, at least 3 minutes, maybe even longer, for the officials to determine whose ball it was. It ended up going to West Virginia, but there's just no excuse for that. And again, that killed the momentum of that game, without question. It absolutely killed the momentum of that game. It's something that the NCAA has got to look into in the offseason about how long these replay reviews should take. Like, I mean, seriously, they have all the technology. Either, you know, three officials, there are too many reviews as it is, too many replays, reviews as it is. You have three officials on the court. So they get an extra official for the NCAA tournament. So there are far too many of those reviews anyway. They have to figure out a way to number one, stop reviewing so many plays. Number two, have it not kill the momentum of a game in the NCAA tournament. 347-215-6180 is your call number. When we return, we'll get into some more NBA. LeVar versus LeBron and some NFL as well. That's coming up on this next edition of Sir Gerald Quinn Sports Podcast. We'll be right back. Is your call number on this next edition of Cyril Gerald Quinn Sports Podcast. A couple other things I wanted to get to in regards to the NBA. The Los Angeles Clippers have reached that point to where, you know, this is part of the problem, the fact that Doc Rivers has so much power, because, you know, Doc Rivers, the general manager, is definitely affecting, definitely affects Doc Rivers, the head coach. Doc Rivers, the head coach, affects Doc Rivers, the general manager, because any reasonable general manager will look at that franchise and say, you know what, unless we win a championship this year, which the odds on that, you know, you want to play that percentage. I think it's basically no chance they have in terms of winning a championship this year. But if a real general manager, to me, I'm already getting ready for the offseason as far as prepping. What am I going to do with that Chris Paul, Blake Griffin dynamic? Which one of those guys are going to move? But Doc Rivers isn't thinking that way, because Doc Rivers, you know, delusionally thinks that they'll get together in the playoffs and that they can go out there and beat either Golden State or San Antonio, if not both, and Houston. Like, so that's the problem with the Clippers right now. It's without question, if you have watched the Clippers this year, especially even when they've been healthy, and both Blake and Chris Paul have been healthy the last, you know, 10 or 15 games, that there's something amiss with that team. Now, So, you know, now the latest, when you had the latest reports coming out that people within that locker room are not happy about the extension that Austin Rivers got, feels like he's getting, you know, preferential treatment. That, you know, that case, that argument is probably a year or two late. Austin Rivers actually has played well this year. I mean, shooting, you know, averaging about 12 points a game, shooting about 46%, is a above average defense, has become an above average defensive player. To be honest with you, Tate, and you know, and has some fire. You know, probably thinks he's better. Is probably thinks he's better than what he really is, but that's fine. I mean, when you basically, if he doesn't have that mentality, he's probably not even in the league. Like, I thought this guy was going to be out of the league a couple of years ago. Like, I thought he wasn't even an NBA player, but he's really turned himself into a pretty good player. Pretty good player, to be honest with you. So he's the first thing from being the issue. But the point is, Doc Rivers, you know, if I'm Steve Ballmer, the owner, I'm telling Doc, like, hey, you gotta pick one. Either head coach, I'll pick it for you. You're just a head coach. This general manager thing, this president thing, we gotta find somebody else. We're gonna find somebody else. So if you wanna still be our head coach, I'm fine with that. I think Doc Rivers is a little overrated as head coach, but he's still better than most. So I would have no problem with keeping him as a head coach. But if he, you know, bucks about that, then it's time to move on it's time to move on in general from Doc Rivers. But if I'm Ballmer, the owner, I'm changing that dynamic. I'm bringing in some basketball people, a real basketball person, and I'm separating that from the coach. I can't have my coach be my general manager. That I can't have. There's only one. Even Popovich doesn't do that. I mean, Popovich has R.C. Buford. Now, R.C. Buford doesn't get talked about a lot, but R.C. Buford is the general manager of the San Antonio Spurs. Now, of course, rightfully so, Popovich has a lot of say, has say in terms of their players, and which he should. He's earned it. But if you don't think that it's time to break up the Clippers now, then you'll never think it is. But this is time for that team to be broken up. And they have some attractive pieces. I mean, you can get some things. You can get some stuff for JJ Redick. You can get some things for Blake Griffin. We can get some things. I mean, maybe they might even want to move DeAndre Jordan. I mean, they have pieces that can be moved that you can get young players and draft picks for. And I'm talking about first round draft picks. So, their run is over. One of the strangest runs, maybe in recent NBA history. Like, I don't even know what team to compare them to. I compare Blake Griffin has had a similar career to Chris Webber. You know, probably would be in the Hall of Fame, but never really fully achieved his max potential as a guy who could have been an all-time great. So, but without question, if you run the Clippers organization, if you are Steve Ballmer, you have to bring in a real president, a real general manager. Like, I'm not even letting Doc in the front office. I don't want Doc making any personnel moves. The only option he would have is the coach. That's it. Yeah, they are on the cut, because they're on the cusp right now. Look at the standings. They're a game ahead. They are a game ahead of Oklahoma City, two games in the win column and tied in the loss column. So they played two more games in Oklahoma City. And what that means is if they finish in six, they'll be, instead of playing Utah in the first round, they'll play Houston in the first round. I mean, the way they're playing right now, I don't have much confidence in them in beating either one of those teams right now, the way they're playing. But you'd definitely rather see Utah, inexperienced team, first time in playoffs for a lot of those players, versus a James Harden and the Houston Rockets, who we know are going to shoot 10 gazillion threes in these playoff games. 347-215-6180 is the call number on this latest edition of the Sergio Quinn Sports Podcast. We'll be right back. Joe Quinn Sports Podcast on this, again, beautiful Saturday morning as we discuss the world of sports. The Elite Eight is set. Again, if you're the NCAA, and to have, I was thinking about it last night as I'm watching, Kentucky, UCLA, and then you have North Carolina. Like, to have those three programs in the same bracket was probably some of the dumbest seeding or some of the dumbest placement in the history of the tournament. Like, you think about it. So North Carolina, UCLA, North Carolina and Kentucky, one of those teams are going to eliminate each other. So, okay, you'll get one of those teams in the Final Four against the winner of Oregon, KU. On the other side, like, there's a possibility that it could be one blue blood and basically three unappealing teams in the Final Four. Like, you can get us, if Oregon upsets Kansas, which is not out of the realms of possibility, which is not out of, like, it's possible. It's not like that wouldn't be the greatest upset in history. KU was a prohibitive favorite in that game. That, like, if Oregon beat Kansas, I'm not going to say I'm shocked. Like, that would be an upset, but it wouldn't be, it wouldn't be the craziest thing that's ever happened in the tournament's history. You can have a situation where you can have, you're talking Gonzaga, Xavier, Florida, South Carolina, and Oregon in the Final Four. So let's say it's, UNC. You could have a situation where it's UNC or Kentucky were taking on Oregon, okay, and any one of Florida, Gonzaga, or South Carolina, South Carolina Xavier. Could you imagine selling that next week? I mean, let's look at the worst possible scenario. UNC Kentucky winner versus Oregon, Florida, South Carolina versus Xavier. I mean, think about that Final Four. I mean, that is not an appealing Final Four this Final Four is going to be a tough sell again, in the worst way. The NCAA has to be hoping for a Kansas North Carolina, Kansas Kentucky. At least they get one game, which they can sell. More than likely you want Kansas North Carolina because those two teams have, Roy Williams coached both of them. You have the, Dean Smith. You have the Dean Smith connection as well. They've met in the Final Four on numerous occasions. They've met in the tournament a lot lately in the past 4 or 5 years, with Kansas being, 2008, back to back years, I believe in 2012 and 2013, they met in back to back years. 2012 and 2013, met in the Final Four in, 93 and 91. So they've met in the Final Four a lot in the past 20 years or so. And then again, you have those connections with Dean Smith, Roy Williams. So, they want UNC Kansas. And lucky and unlucky for them, it's not UNC Kansas in the championship. Like it would be UNC Kansas in the national semifinal. So, I mean, trying to sell Gonzaga, trying to sell Xavier, trying to sell Florida, or even South Carolina. I mean, good luck. Good luck with that. Good luck with that. 347-215-6180. NFL note before we head out. Adrian Peterson wants $8 million a year in the first year of his deal. And, you know, wants, of course, a multi-year deal. Like, you know, I don't know who his agent is. Like, Adrian Peterson might not play football this year if his demands don't come down like dramatically. Nobody is paying old running backs, and he's, you know, I just don't think he views himself in terms of being an old running back. Well, you know, he's 32 years old. He's an old running back, a guy who's been injured, you know, coming off an injury at that. Barely played this year. So, again, Green, I heard, you know, you've heard talks about Green Bay is looking at him, possibly. Nobody's paying $8 million for Adrian Peterson. Even the dumbest NFL franchises would be like, all I'm saying, like, no. Like, hold on. I mean, there's no position in football that's more devalued in terms of glamour position or, you know, skill position than running back. Nobody wants a old running back. And if you notice, these running backs are getting re-signed are only signing one-year deals. And that's been a theme in the offseason. Even players who are in their prime, Alshon Jeffrey, Brandon Marshall, those guys are signing, maybe Brandon Marshall to a lesser extent, but definitely Alshon Jeffrey. They're signing short-term deals. And the money is not, I mean, they're not getting big money. There's not been a lot of money tossed around in the NFL like outside of Jacksonville going on a spending spree, there's not been a lot of money thrown around in the NFL free agency this year. There really hasn't, as comparisons to other years. So Adrian Peterson is like, I don't know. Again, I wouldn't be surprised if Adrian Peterson did not play football this year. If he doesn't come down on his demands, I would like, because no teams don't even come close to signing him to give him $8 million a year. It's not even, like, I don't care what incentives or what, he will not sniff that amount of money. I mean, he'll be lucky to get half that. So looking forward to the Elite Eight tomorrow, today, tonight, and tomorrow, especially tomorrow, UNC, Kentucky. Again, these teams met earlier in the year, similar styles in terms of going up and down the court. Kentucky has more talent. They have more guys that will play at the next level than North Carolina, but North Carolina has the experience. With a couple of seniors and juniors, in particular Justin Jackson, Joe Berry. How healthy is Joe Berry is a question. Will be the question. You know, quick turnaround between Friday and Sunday. North Carolina plays the afternoon game. The late game will be on Sunday. North Carolina plays the later game. North Carolina plays the later of the two games. Florida, South Carolina will be 2:20 game, that early afternoon game. North Carolina and Kentucky will be the 5:05 game on Sunday, the last spot, which makes sense. But Jim Nance normally always gets to call that last game before the final four. So, you know, we'll see how healthy Barry is. We'll see how, you know, Kentucky can keep up with North Carolina for us going up and down the floor, which they proved they could early December. Gonzaga, Xavier, you know, again, you have to be a basketball purist to love that matchup. Kansas, Oregon, and Florida, South Carolina. Looking forward to it. I will speak to you next week as we hope to get back Javon Alford back on the program to preview the Final Four. Have a great rest of the weekend. So long.